Page 127. One of the most conspicuous feature of the agitators' speeches, namely the absence of a positive program and of anything they might give, as well as the paradoxical prevalence of threat and denial, is thus being accounted for. The leader can be loved only if he himself does not love. Yet Freud is aware of another aspect of the leader image which apparently contradicts the first one. While appearing as a superman, the leader must at the same time work the miracle of appearing as an average person, just as Hitler posed as a composite of King Kong and the suburban barber. This too, Freud explains through his theory of narcissism. According to him, the individual gives up his ego ideal and substitutes for it the group ideal as embodied in the leader. However, in many individuals, the separation between the ego and the ego ideal is not very far advanced. The two still coincide readily. The ego has often preserved its earlier self-complacency. The selection of the leader is very much facilitated by the circumstance. He needs only possess the typical qualities of the individuals concerned in a particularly clearly marked and pure form, and need only give an impression of greater force and of more freedom of libido. And in the case, the need for a strong chief will often meet him halfway and invest him with a predominance to which he would otherwise perhaps have had no claim. The other members of the group, whose ego ideal would not, apart from this, have become embodied in this person without some correction, are then carried away with the rest of suggestion, that is to say, by means of identification. Footnote 22. Text. Even the fascist leader's startling symptoms of inferiority, his resemblance to ham actors and a social psychopath, is thus anticipated in Freud's theory. For the sake, those parts of the followers' narcissistic libido which have not been thrown into the leader image but remain attached to the follower's own ego, the superman must still resemble the follower and appear as his enlargement. Accordingly, one of the basic devices of personalized fascist propaganda is the concept of the great little man, a person who suggests both omnipotence and the idea that he is just one of the folks, a plain red-blooded American, untainted by material or spiritual wealth. Psychological ambivalence helps to work a social miracle. The leader image gratifies the followers' twofold wish to submit to authority and to be authority himself. This fits into a world in which irrational control is exercised, though it has lost its inner conviction through universal enlightenment. Page 128. The people who obey the dictators also sense that the latter are superfluous. They reconcile this contradiction through the assumption that they are themselves the ruthless oppressors. All the agitators' standard devices are designed along the line of Freud's exposé of what became later the basic structure of fascist demagoguery. The technique of personalization, footnote 23, text, and the idea of the great little man. We limit ourselves to a few examples picked at random. Freud gives an exhaustive account of the hierarchical element in irrational groups. It is obvious that a soldier takes his superior, that is, really the leader of the army, as his ideal, while he identifies himself with his equals and derives from the community of their egos the obligations for giving mutual help and for sharing possessions, which comradeship implies. But he becomes ridiculous if he tries to identify himself with the general. Footnote 24, text. To wit, consciously and directly. the fascists down to the last small-time demagogue continuously emphasize ritualistic ceremonies and hierarchical differentiations. The less hierarchy within the setup of a highly rationalized and quantified industrial society is warranted, the more artificial hierarchies with no abject raison d'être are built up and rigidly imposed by fascists for purely psycho-technical reasons. It may be added, however, that this is not the only libidinous source involved. Thus, hierarchical structures are in complete keeping with the wishes of the sadomasochistic character. Hitler's famous formula, Verantwortung nach oben, Autorität nach unten, responsibility towards above, authority towards below, nicely rationalizes this character's ambivalence. Footnote 25, text. The tendency to tread on those below, which manifests itself so disastrously in the persecution of weak and helpless minorities, is as outspoken as the hatred against those outside. In practice, both tendencies quite frequently fall together. Freud's theory sheds light on the all-pervasive, rigid distinction between the beloved in-group and the rejected out-group. Throughout our culture, this way of thinking and behaving has come to be regarded as self-evident to such a degree that the question of why people love what is like themselves and hate what is different is rarely asked seriously enough. Here, as in many other instances, the productivity of Freud's approach lies in his questioning that which is generally accepted. Le Bons has noticed that the irrational crowd goes directly to extreme. Footnote 26, text. Freud expands this observation and points out that dichotomy between in and out group is of so deep-rooted a nature that it affects even those groups whose ideas apparently exclude such reactions. Page 129. By 1921, he was therefore able to dispense with the liberalistic illusions that the progress of civilization would automatically bring about an increase of tolerance and a lessening of violence against outgroups. Even during the Kingdom of Christ, those people who do not belong to the community of believers, who do not love him and whom he does not love, stand outside this time. Therefore, a religion, even if it calls itself the religion of love, must be hard and unloving to those who do not belong to it. Fundamentally, indeed, every religion is in the same way a religion of love for all those whom it embraces, while cruelty and intolerance towards those who do not belong to it are natural to every religion. However difficult we may find it personally, we ought not to reproach believers too severely on this account. People who are unbelieving or indifferent are so much better off psychologically in this respect. If today that intolerance no longer shows itself so violent and cruel as in former centuries, we can scarcely conclude that there has been a softening in human manners. The cause is rather to be found in the undeniable weakening of religious feelings and the libidinal ties which depend upon them. If another group tie takes the place of the religious one and the socialistic tie seems to be succeeding in doing so, then there will be the same intolerance towards outsiders as in the age of the wars of religion. Footnote 27, text. Freud's error in political prognosis, his blaming the socialists for what their German arch-enemies did, is as striking as his prophecy of fascist destructiveness, the drive to eliminate the outgroup. Footnote 28, text. As a matter of fact, neutralization of religion seems to have led to just the opposite of what the enlightener Freud anticipated. The division between the believers and non-believers has been maintained and reified. However, it has become a structure in itself, independent of any ideational content, and is even more stubbornly defended since it lost its inner conviction. At the same time, the mitigating impact of the religious doctrine of love vanished. This is the essence of the sheep and goat device employed by all fascist demagogues, since they do not recognize any spiritual criterion in regard to who is chosen and who is rejected. They substitute a pseudo-natural criterion such as the race, footnote 29, text, which seems to be inescapable and can therefore be applied even more merciless than was the concept of heresy during the Middle Ages. Page 130. Freud has succeeded in identifying the libidinal function of this device. It acts as a negatively integrating force, since the positive libido is completely invested in the image of the primal father, the leader, and since few positive contents are available, a negative one has to be found. The leader of the leading idea might also, so to speak, be negative. Hatred against a particular person or institution might operate in just the same unifying way and might call up the same kind of emotional ties as positive attachment. Footnote 30, text. It goes without saying that this negative integration feeds on the instinct of destructiveness to which Freud does not explicitly refer in his group psychology, the decisive role of which he has, however, recognized in his Civilization and its Contents. In the present context, Freud explains the hostility against the outgroup with narcissism. In the undisguised antipathies and aversion which people feel towards strangers with whom they have to do, we may recognize the expression of self-love, of narcissism. This self-love works for the self-assertion of the individual and behaves as though the occurrence of any divergence from his own particular lines of development involved a criticism of them, in a demand for their alteration. Footnote 31, text. The narcissistic gain provided by fascist propaganda is obvious. It suggests continuously and sometimes in rather devious ways that the follower, simply through belonging to the in-group, is better, higher, and purer than those who are excluded. At the same time, any kind of critique of self-awareness is resented as a narcissistic loss and elicits rage. It accounts for the violent reaction of all fascists against what they deem zersetzend, that which debunks their own stubbornly maintained values, and it also explains the hostility of pre-justiced person against any kind of introspection. Concomitantly, the concentration of hostility upon the out-group does away with intolerance in one's own group to which one's relation would otherwise be highly ambivalent. But the whole of this intolerance vanishes temporarily or permanently as the result of the formation of a group and inner group, so long as a group formation persists or so far as it extends. Individuals behave as though they were uniform, tolerate other people's peculiarities, put themselves on an equal level with them, and have no feeling of aversion toward them. Such a limitation of narcissism can, according to our theoretical views, only be produced by one factor, a libidinal tie with other people. Footnote 32, text.